Welcome to Children of the 80s.
I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Jim. And we're back. We're doing a Valentine's episode.
All about love.
Yeah, baby.
Love.
I feel like you should have the Barry White deep voice.
Love.
I can't even do that.
Oh, my goodness. So I feel like this episode's going to give me the willies, because you know these songs in the 80s, Little Lynn's kind of got a little weird little feeling in her tummy over them. She didn't understand it.
So that's funny. You know, I probably felt the same way.
Yeah.
You know, as younger.
Yeah.
As a younger person, you'd hear it and you'd be like, I don't know. Certain key words.
Correct. Key words that are forbidden in this house. That will not be spoken.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. There are certain words, and they're not curse words. They're not dirty words.
They're just gross words
that you like, they give you the willies, and you're like, you do not
and
say
we
that
we do
in
not
this
put
house.
Those words together in this house.
Do you want to give somebody an example?
Moist. We don't say that in this house, because it's gross.
Oh, my goodness. So, like your Duncan Hines cake, if you saw a 1980s commercial and it was talking about Duncan Hines cake and it said it was the most moist cake you could find,
yeah,
that,
no.
That
commercial would creep you out. I would dry heave.
That's funny.
We make dinner in this house.
Uh-huh.
We don't make other things in this house.
Oh, boy. But they do in these songs.
They do, boy, and they like to talk about it. How embarrassing.
So what are we celebrating today?
Valentine's Day.
What kind of music are we celebrating in this
Wait
episode?
Wait a minute. You didn't even acknowledge that I said it wrong.
Oh, did you say Valentine's Day?
I did.
Oh, my goodness.
I did it on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's Jim's pet peeve when people say Valentine's.
Yeah, it's an N, folks. It's not an M. It's not a time of Valen. It is Valentine's Day.
So we celebrated Valentine's Day today a little early, and Jim took me out to lunch. My favorite meal is breakfast, and I will eat it at any time of day. So we did breakfast for lunch, and I got one of everything on the menu. So I am carbed up. I'm sugared up. I mean, this episode could go one of two ways. I could crash and burn, or I could derail us down all sorts of...
It could go off the rails. Or you could have all kinds of energy and just go at 1,000 miles
an hour. But when have you ever seen me with a lot of energy?
Never.
Yeah. So, but we're all about Valentine's Day today.
Yes, and we are celebrating duets from the 1980s. Duet love songs. So you won't find stuff like Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney, say, right?
I thought you were going to say Ebony and Ivory.
You won't find Ebony and Ivory. No, these are duet love songs. But let me tell you what the countdown doesn't include besides Michael Jackson.
You and your parameters.
Anything Paul McCartney will not be on this episode.
Okay.
But it also doesn't include Hall & Oates. One reason is because you don't respect Hall and Oates enough to be able to get to talk about them.
Now, that's funny.
But two, I don't consider Hall and Oates a duet, do you?
No.
I consider them like a band because they made lots of records together.
Yeah, they're a duo.
Yeah, they're a duo. They're not a duet.
Yes.
So, yeah, they're not on this list.
And they bore me, so let's...
You know, I'm going to start making fun of Southerners again if you keep talking bad about Hall & Oates.
Oh, they don't even like each other. Why should I like them?
They did for a long time, but
boy,
yeah.
Boy, they had a lover's quarrel, didn't they?
I've heard it's gone downhill,
that
relationship. But here are some relationships that won't go downhill. those are songs we'll be talking about. They live on forever.
And ever. In infamy.
In infamy?
Is that not a word?
It is a word, but it's usually like something bad. Although I think you might think that some of these songs will live in infamy.
Yes.
You don't like these songs nearly as much as I do, or at least some of them.
Correct. So the ones that I like, I love.
Yes.
The ones I don't like, I hate.
That's funny.
Yeah, there's no middle ground here for me.
So we're counting down our top 12 love duets from the 1980s. A lot of these songs were on movie soundtracks.
Yes, because there was nothing like a good movie soundtrack in the 80s.
That had a duet on it, apparently.
That had a duet on it. I mean, when I think of, you know, the great 80s movies, there's always an accompanying soundtrack.
Yes, there are great soundtracks of the 80s, and that might be a few episodes that we could probably cover, because there were a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, are there any non-1980s duets that you think of that you like maybe something from the 70s, something from the 90s, whatever?
I got one for you. Sheryl Crow and Kid Rock.
Oh, Pictures, right?
Yep. What do you think of that?
Oh, wow. So this is how old I am, right? Like, I wasn't even going to the 90s. I was thinking
of, that's 2000s.
Oh, that is 2000s. My fault. I was thinking of going back to like the 1970s and thinking of, what is it? Elton John and Kiki D, Don't Go Breaking My Heart.
That's a good one, though. I always think of Full House. Remember the two little kids on Full House sang that at a talent show?
Yes, I do.
So it's so funny. You go,
I go
one way, yeah. And I go the other way.
That's a microcosm of our marriage.
That pretty much explains it all.
Got anything else? I mean, we talked about
Endless Love?
Endless Love is actually 1980, but sadly it does not make our countdown.
Is it a duet?
It is a duet. It's Lionel Richie and Diana Ross.
So why did it not make our countdown?
Because I absolutely hate that song.
Really?
Yes.
How is that possible?
Because I just do.
Did you just hear it too much?
No, I just hate it. I just think it's terrible.
Wow.
And I get it. A lot of people love it. I'm probably going to get hate mail or hate tweets or whatever. Well, that's fine.
That's on you.
It's my opinion. I hate it. It's horrible. It was used funny in the movie Happy Gilmore, and that's about all I respect about it.
I was going to say maybe that's why you don't like it.
No.
Okay, well, I can't think of anything else. Do you have something?
You know, we did talk about some country duets of the 80s back in a previous episode. Those aren't included here either. We didn't want to.
Because there are a lot of those.
Yeah, we didn't want to double dip, and we basically could have made it the same the same podcast as it was when we did our country crossover. So, yeah, we're skipping those as well. But so are you ready to get to our countdown?
I'm excited.
You're excited. Okay. Well,
when do you ever see me excited? It's that waffle I ate.
Hit the music.
It's the final countdown. I don't have much of a budget.
Oh.
I used all my funds for these songs, so.
Now that's awesome. All right, let's just get straight to number 12. So this is Tonight I Celebrate My Love by Peebo Bryson and Roberta Fleck from 1983. And this is one of the first love songs that I remember as a kid being on the radio.
Really?
Yes. Then I knew it was a love song.
Yeah. I mean, this song is just so bad.
So this is one of those songs that you absolutely hate.
Yes. It screams 1983.
Oh, it totally screams 1983. So this, did you know that Peebo Bryson and Roberta Flack released a duet album together in 1983?
I didn't, but I'm assuming that this song was on there.
This song was on there. It was the only one to chart in the top 40, so it can't be that bad. It can't be as bad as you're making it out to be.
Wait, say that again.
It's the only song from that album to chart on the top 40.
That means the whole album sucked.
Right. But this song was better than the suck of the rest of it.
Sorry, I got a little...
Yeah, you despise this song, I know. Is it because they say one of those words that...
Yes.
Or two of those words together?
Yes.
So it hit number 16 on the Billboard Hot 100, which as a 9-year-old, I would have been shocked because I feel like this was on the radio all the time in 1983. Hit number 4 on the adult contemporary chart. Maybe that's why I heard it so much, because my parents were probably listening to the adult contemporary.
I'm sure they were.
Number 4 in Canada and South Africa, and number 5 in Ireland. It also reached the top 10 in 5 other countries. So it wasn't just America that loved this song, Lindsay. You are the denier. You are the only hater.
Here's the thing. Peebo Bryson and Roberta Flack are both great artists. So they just, it didn't work. They didn't work together in this song.
So Peebo to me is like the king of the duets, because he had huge hits in the 90s, actually, duets working on what he did, Beauty and the Beast. And he did A Whole New World, I think, from Aladdin with Regina Bell. So apparently Peebo is like the Disney go-to guy when it comes to duets. But, the highest charting country, you know, I said it was top 10 in 5 other countries. It actually reached number 2 in the UK. Now, we have UK listeners, so thank you, UK listeners, for making this song reach number 2 over in your homeland.
Your homeland.
It finished 1983 as the number 96 song on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 year-end chart. That sounds about right, number 96. The Telegraph has listed this song as one of the 50 best love songs of the 1980s.
What does The Telegraph know? Absolutely nothing.
I think they're also from the UK.
So here, let me tell you how I know this song. Well, first of all, I know it one of two ways. I feel like this song was always playing at Kroger over the intercom while my mom was grocery shopping.
Okay.
So that just brings up just having to, you know, walk along behind the buggy while she shopped. But I know this song because it was Bo and Hope's love song on Days of Our Lives back in the 1980s when their love story was all the rage on Days of Our Lives, the NBC soap opera, daytime soap opera.
Yes, that is correct. I actually had that in my notes. Do you feel like there were many a wedding dances in 1983 and 1984 where the couples danced their first dance to this song?
Yes. Yes. And 99.9% of them are still not married.
Because of their first dance song? No, I bet that's untrue. I bet if we have any older listeners out there, reach out to us. If this was your wedding song, this is what you played at your wedding, your first dance to, and you're still married, let us know. Conversely, if you're divorced and it doesn't hurt too bad to talk about it, let us know that as well.
Oh,
that's fantastic. 99%. So is that the only thing you've got on them?
That's all I got.
Kroger and Bo and Hope, Days of Our Lives.
That's all.
I just remember hearing it all the time at my house. I don't know why, but yeah, it was on all the time. So, all right. So you take away our number 11 song.
Okay, number 11.
And even though I know how very far apart we are, it helps to think we might be wishing on the same bright star.
And when the night wind starts to sing a lonesome lullaby, it helps to think we're sleeping underneath the same big sky.
Somewhere out there, Linda Ronstadt and James Ingram, 1986. Now, when you put this song on my list and you wanted me to, you know, listen to it and rank it, I don't equate this as a love song. So it's, this confused. I was like, what? Am I misremembering this song? Like, I had to go back, you know, listen to it, do some digging, whatever. And then I realized it's because I associate it with An American Tale, which was a cartoon movie. Was it a Disney movie? I think it was.
It is. Yes, it's a Disney movie.
Yeah. So that's why, to me, it's not a love song.
But it is a love song.
Between two mice?
Somewhere out there, love will see us through.
Two little mice?
If you want to only associate it with the movie, yes. And it's not a, it's a love song, a brother and sister love song. But
Linda Ronstadt and James Ingram are brother and sister.
No, the mice are brother and sister. You know, sometimes I just want to reach across the table and like thump you in the head.
I know. I know. So let me give you some chart info on this. How does that sound? Okay. So it reached number 2 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100, also reached number 2 in Canada. It reached number 4 on the U.S. Adult Contemporary chart. Okay, so it was playing, you know, pretty consistently, I guess, on the radio.
It sounds like an adult contemporary song. It's horrible.
It was a top 10 hit in the U.K., Ireland, and the Netherlands. 1987 year in, it ended up song number 39. I'm assuming that's what the top 100 in the
top
US?
100 for the 1987. Yeah, I would say that's a travesty. That song shouldn't be any higher than 130.
Yes, I know. I mean,
because 1987 had good music.
I know.
I don't know how this ends up in the top 40.
Yeah,
that's terrible.
Yeah. So it also won some awards though. It won a Grammy for Song of the Year. It also won a Grammy for Best Song Written Specifically for a Motion Picture or Television Show. It was nominated for Best Pop Performance by a Duo or Group. It was also nominated for an Oscar for Best Original Song, but it lost out to Take My Breath Away from Top Gun. Thank goodness.
Yeah, yeah. I can see why it was nominated for an Oscar. It sounds like an Oscar song, right? If it was a Disney movie, it sounds like an Oscar song, but to me, it's not a popular music song. Mm-mm. It's horrible. It made our list over. That should tell you how much I hate Diana Ross and Stevie Wonder.
Yeah, see, I don't.
Not Stevie Wonder. I'm sorry, Lionel Richie. I don't know why I said Stevie Wonder.
That's not Cut fair, that. Though. That deserves to be there compared to this one.
I didn't remember how bad this was, and I think I put it on the list. Not remembering how bad it was, I remembered how bad the other one, Endless Love, was.
Endless Love. Yeah.
No, I remember how bad that was. So I didn't remember how bad this one was. I would probably, upon further review, you know, we just had the Super Bowls, right? So upon further review, I would boot this song from our list.
I love that. Okay, can we just move on?
Yeah, we can.
Can we just move on from it?
Let's move on to number 10, which is a much better song.
And we're going to give Linda Ronstadt a second chance.
We are going to give her a second chance.
And she deserves, because I love Linda Ronstadt. Yes. So she deserves that second chance.
Yeah, she was one of the biggest stars of the 70s. Yep. So.
Well, I'm going to let you do number 10.
Okay, go ahead. Well, let's play it right now.
Look at these dreams, so big and so bad.
Let me say something real quick.
Yes.
I was thinking this already as I'm like preparing for this episode, but now just listening to this song, I should have ranked this higher.
Yeah.
I'm going to say something that you're going to not believe.
What did you rank this as?
Let me see. I put this at number 9.
Yeah, some of your rankings were wacky, and then some of them to me were like right on.
I actually really love this song. Here's the thing. Here's, I think, where I got kind of torn when I was ranking. I didn't like it as a kid.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't like it as a kid, and so when I was ranking it, that's how I was thinking.
Okay.
But I actually really like the song now.
All right. It's funny how your tastes change, though, yeah. over time, right?
Right.
So if we were ranking this in 1989, you'd have given this a big fat...
Exactly, yes.
But now you're like, okay, maybe it should have been higher. So this song was on Linda Ronstadt's triple platinum album, Cry Like a Rainstorm, Howl Like the Wind. It was actually a big hit. It was number 2 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100, but number 1 on the Adult Contemporary chart, of course. It also hit number 1 in Ireland. It was number 2 in Australia and the U.K., and it was a top 6 song in Austria, Belgium, Canada, Netherlands, and New Zealand. So, big song around a lot of countries. So, for the year end, it actually... So, this was released in 1989, but it actually ended up on the 1990 year-end mm-hmm. charts,
yep.
as a lot of songs do. And it ended up as the number 20 song overall in 1990. That's a pretty big hit.
Yeah, and I think it deserves that.
It actually finished higher in Australia, and we have some Australian listeners, too. So shout out to those folks down under. And it was number 12 on the year-end charts in Australia. So
wow.
It made the top 10, yeah.
Wow, okay.
They loved it more than we did.
Okay.
So this is actually a cover. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
So this is a cover of a 1980 song by Barry Mann. It was then covered again in 1981 by Bill Medley of the Righteous Brothers, where it hit number 88 on the Hot 100. So, you know, you wouldn't have heard it on Casey Kasem, but, you know, it got a little bit of airplay. Covered again in 1983 by Bette Midler, where it hit 77 on the Hot 100. I got to imagine that's atrocious.
Wow.
I didn't listen to it, but I got to imagine that's bad. But it was, obviously, it was most successful as a duet between,
right.
you know, Linda and Aaron. So, you know, the only thing I'll say about this song is just about everyone I know does an Aaron Neville impression of this song.
They do.
I thought I was the only one, and then I've heard other people do it. It's hilarious.
He, to me, as a kid, when I saw him, the first I knew of Aaron Neville was when this song came out.
Mm-hmm.
He was very, like, polarizing to me because he looked one way. He looked real tough to me and mean and whatever. And then he sang like this, and it confused me.
Well, you were young, so...
I was very confused. So my personal story that I have about this song...
Okay.
They won an award on an award show. I don't... A Grammy? Is that... Have we talked about what awards?
I didn't see that in my research, but it's possible. I may have missed
that. And they came out on stage to accept their award.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have been, what, 10 maybe at the 10, time?
10, maybe so 11, yeah.
Any kind of... chemistry they had, I wouldn't have probably caught on to it. I remember my mom saying, be a cold day before I let my husband be up on that stage with her acting that way.
Oh, really? Was she flirtatious?
I don't know. I don't remember, but I will never forget. My mom was like visibly like agitated at Linda Ronstadt for acting the way she was acting with Aaron Neville.
Was Aaron Neville married?
I don't know.
I'm pretty
Who
sure.
Who knows?
I'm pretty sure he wasn't married to your mom.
I mean, but she was very like, it rubbed her the wrong way.
Oh, wow.
And she didn't think it was appropriate. And that has stuck with me for 40 years. Well, maybe not 40. 30 years.
Wow. Okay. I don't really have anything other than, you know, what I said about everybody I know doing an Aaron Neville impersonation.
Yep.
So I guess it's your turn to take it away. And I know what the number 9 song is. You rated this a lot higher than I did.
Where would the 80s/90s have been without Peter Cetera?
Well, yeah, no, I agree. The world is a much better place because Peter Cetera sang during the 80s.
So that's Next Time I Fall, Peter Cetera and Amy Grant. I question his decision to pick Amy Grant on this one, but I also think he liked to pick unique duet partners.
Yes.
And she was definitely unique. But this is from 1986.
Right.
I could not love Peter Cetera anymore if I tried. So this song came off of his Solitude Solitaire album, his second solo album after leaving Chicago. Mm-hmm. The only thing wrong with Peter Cetera is his decision to leave Chicago and how he went about doing it.
What's that story? How he went about doing it?
Let's just do an episode on that, can we?
Sure.
Can we just save that? And
is it a mini?
Maybe. I just want to talk about Chicago because I love Chicago. So let's just save that.
Okay.
But, so I could delve in. Like, was it better for his career that he did that and he went on and became like the duet master of the 80s and 90s? Like, did that behoove him, or would he have had more success had he have stayed as Chicago's front man?
Did you say behoove? Okay, so I have a couple of opinions on this. I did not think we were going down.
Yeah.
Here. Okay. Number
it's
one,
the waffle.
Does Chicago? The waffle made me do it.
Yes.
Number one, does Chicago ever record The Glory of Love?
No.
Right.
Chicago never would have done The Glory of Love.
We miss out on one of the great
yes.
love songs of the 1980s. Also a soundtrack song from The Karate Kid 2. Would Look Away have been as good and or the same? I know it wouldn't have been the same with Peter Cetera. Does Peter Cetera take a back seat for that one? Because by the time 1984-85 rolls around, Peter Cetera is pretty much the lead singer of Chicago. They're, you know, the other guy sometimes sings, but for the most part, it's Peter Cetera.
Well, I guess I thought, because I think, does Robert Lamb sing Look Away, I think?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, you know Chicago much better than I do.
I guess in my mind, Peter Cetera wouldn't have fought him for that. How would I know that?
It was written for Chicago by Diane Warren, so it wasn't, I don't know. Peter Cetera had some great solo albums, some great solo hits. I don't know about great solo albums.
But then when he stopped, he just stopped. Like, what's he doing now?
I mean, he's old. Chicago was around in the 60s.
I know. Some of them are still performing, dancing around shirtless on stage.
Yeah, the trombone player. I'd say the big.
He's a little fella. Okay. So, I'm sorry.
Give me the deets on the song.
Okay, The Next Time I Fall reached number one on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 and Adult Contemporary chart. It did the same in Canada, number one on the pop and their AC charts there. Just a minor success, though, in the U.K. and Australia and New Zealand charts. So I guess they didn't love them.
They weren't loving
Cetera.
Or Amy Grant.
And it was probably Amy Grant, honestly. it landed number 28 on the 1987 year-end chart.
You know what? I love our listeners in the UK and Australia and New Zealand, but I will say that Every Heartbeat does not bear their name.
It was nominated for a Grammy Award for Best Pop Performance by a Duo or a Group with Vocals. But it lost out to That's What Friends Are For.
As it should have.
As it should have, yes. Very much so.
Good song. I don't hate the song. I like the song. But yeah, it's not That's What Friends Are For. So what'd you find out on your research?
So this was Amy Grant's first crossover hit from the contemporary Christian music charts, because that's where she got her start.
Right.
She was a contemporary Christian music artist. And so this was her first crossover from that. And I have but I'm pretty sure that was a tough crossover for her.
Yes. Yes.
Right. I'm sure that she got a lot of slack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I found out a little something about this song.
Tell me.
You know, the writers of this song, they actually wrote this for Chicago with Peter Cetera in mind. They didn't know that he was leaving Chicago.
I wonder.
And so they wanted Peter Cetera to sing the vocals for Chicago.
As a duet, I wonder?
No, just as like the band song.
Okay.
And so then when they gave it to him, he thought, you know what, let's make this a duet. And who can I make my duet partner? And he liked the idea of Amy Grant.
Yeah, and again, I think he had a unique ear. He picked some interesting duet partners.
He had a unique voice.
He absolutely.
One of the best voices.
Yes.
So this was also his, the only personal story that I have about this is that I remember this came out after Glory of Love, which I loved Glory of Love. I know you've never seen Karate Kid 2. I mean, we just need to sit down through a weekend and power through the Karate Kid movie so you can be on the same page as me, although I feel like the love won't be there for you.
Probably not.
As it did for me, but you see that as a 10-year-old, or I guess maybe in Karate Kid 2 as a 12-year-old, and there was just like, Karate Kid's one of my top five movies of the 80s.
A like boy? Do you need to be like a 10, 12-year-old boy, or just a 10, 12-year-old kid?
I think it might be 10, 12-year-old kid. My sister Carly liked it.
Okay. Okay.
So, of course, she was, you know, she liked to beat me up, too, or try to. So maybe that's why she liked it. She liked the karate part of it. So, yeah, that was my thoughts on it. You have anything else?
I think that's it. I think I've carried on about Peter Cetera and Amy Grant enough.
All right. Well, then we are moving on to number 8.
I don't know what we're afraid of. Nothing can change if we made love.
So I'll be your friend. And I'll be
So that is Friends and Lovers by Gloria Loring and Carl Anderson. And the reason why I'm laughing right now is because lover is one of those words that you don't allow to be said in this house.
That's disgusting.
So, that tickles me. We're talking about Valentine's Day and you don't want to use the word lover.
That's disgusting. But sometimes I love that you will enter the room at our house and be like, hello, lover.
Yes, yes.
Just to see the look on my face.
Absolutely. So, Friends and Lovers, Gloria Loring and Carl Anderson. It was recorded in 1985 for the soap opera, Days of Our Lives.
There we go again.
There we are on Days of Our Lives again. Now, we mentioned Gloria Loring in a recent episode. Do you remember who she is?
She an actress?
She's an actress. She's also...
Oh! Was she originally married to Alan Thicke?
Yes.
Yes! That and waffle! I need a waffle before every podcast.
Did she sing on Facts of Life?
She did the theme song.
Yes. So, this was released... So, it was recorded in 85 for Days of Our Life, but it actually wasn't released until the summer of 86, after a country version was released by Juice Newton and Eddie Rabbit.
Hold on a minute.
I think you might need to play that version.
So, those are two fantastic artists. But.
We talked in our country crossover episode about how much we loved, or at least how much I loved Eddie Rabbit, and how much we both loved Juice Newton. That was brutal.
That was pretty hard to listen
that
to.
That was brutal. So I'm going to go with Gloria Loring and Carl Anderson, like, as a 100 compared to their 1.
But I've never heard of Carl Anderson. Is he? He's not somebody I should have heard of, is he?
Probably. He's probably somebody that you should have heard of. He's probably somebody that I should have heard of. But honestly, the memory bank is not pulling up Carl Anderson. Yeah, I'm not singer actor, but I'm not coming up with anything. So either way, the Days of Our Lives version, much better than the country version. So here's what happened. Let me give you the details on it. Hit number 2 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100. It was number 1 on the Adult Contemporary chart, along with the Canadian Adult Contemporary chart. as well as the Canadian top singles chart. So huge in Canada, number 13 in Australia and 43 in New Zealand, but didn't chart anywhere else.
Wow.
At all. But here's what's so funny. It was huge. I mean, I already told you it was number two, right? Number one mm-hmm. in adults. It finished 1986 as the number 13 song.
Wow.
In America. And number eight in Canada. So here in North America, we loved okay. this song. Maybe it was because Days of Our Lives, maybe Days of Our Lives played in Canada. I mean, I wouldn't know that, but maybe it did. I don't know, but it was a huge hit. So, as previously mentioned, recorded for Days of Our Lives, Gloria Loring portrayed the character Liz Chandler on the show, and her character was, shocker of all shockers, a lounge singer.
Oh, of course.
So she was always performing,
yes.
you know, on screen. It became the theme music for super couple Shane Donovan and Kimberly Brady.
Yep, I remember them.
It hit number two on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 for 2 weeks. So I had mentioned earlier that it hit number two. It was on there for 2 weeks, but it was kept off the charts by the superior Huey Lewis in the News.
Good for you, Huey.
Stuck with you.
Good for you.
The country version hit number one on the country charts, which tells me that in 1985, country music must have sucked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's about all I have. I mean, I don't really have any personal stories or thoughts about yeah. this song other than I remember hearing it in 1986, and I was like, yeah, this is kind of a neat love song. You know, you get about 12, 13, you start, you know.
Yeah.
Like Gar said in Wayne's World, get that funny feeling like I'm climbing up the rope in gym class.
Okay, well, let's move on to the next funny feeling that we have.
Okay. I always feel like my best isn't good enough.
Yeah, I know, right?
So I know, so this song is only number seven on our list. I know this is your song, but I want to take something over. This okay. song is only number seven on our list, and it's all because you rated this as the 11th song.
It's horrible.
No, this song is awesome. I rated it as the number two song.
What?
Yes.
Are you kidding
yes,
me?
Yes, this is my second favorite song on this list.
This is a terrible
song. You rated it as 11.
It's not a duet.
Okay, so in fairness, it is not a duet. We did kind of skirt the rules a little bit because it is on Quincy Jones' album, and it's Quincy Jones featuring James Ingram. Quincy Jones sings some background vocals. So while it's not a true duet, it's still way better than Endless Love.
No. So it was released in 1981 on Quincy Jones's album, The Dude. So James Ingram is the lead vocalist. Quincy Jones does sing some backup vocals. Kind of. So technically it's not a duet, but if he sings backup, we're letting it in, I guess.
I'm letting it in. I also wanted a male song. We could have done Phil Collins and Philip Bailey, Easy Lover.
I would have probably preferred that one. So it reached number 17 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 chart. Number 7 on the U.S. Adult Contemporary chart. Number 11 on the U.S. Billboard R&B Singles. Here, this is all I'm going to say. It was 1981.
Yes.
We hadn't recovered from the 70s. Our judgment wasn't what it should have been.
I guess my judgment still isn't what it should be because I love this song.
It was nominated for a Grammy for Best Male Pop Vocal Performance, but lost out to Al Jarreau. The nomination kind of proves this wasn't a duet, but it's a good love song, and it's appropriate for Valentine's Day. That is something that you made me say. That was in the notes, and you highlighted it, and you were like, you're an arrow, like I had to say it. So on a television interview that James Ingram did, he stated that this song was a $50 demo done by ATV Music, composed by Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil. Quincy Jones called and wanted Ingram to sing it on his album because he liked it so much.
So I'm not the only one that liked it. Quincy Jones liked it, and how dare you argue with the great Quincy Jones?
You can't.
I feel like you think it was a $5 demo.
It was.
And I guess that's all you're going to say about that.
That's all I got.
Because you hate it that much.
That's all I got.
I have been walking around singing this song at the top of my lungs through the house, A, because I like it, B, because we're putting it on this list, and C, because you hate it.
That sounds about right.
All right, well, we're moving on to number 6. So that is Leather and Lace by Stevie Nicks and Don Henley.
I love the juxtaposition of this.
The song. Juxtaposition. Look at you breaking out the big words. That's a great Scrabble word, juxtaposition. Right? I don't think you can get it, though, because I think you only get 7 tiles.
Yeah.
So I have a theory on Stevie Nicks.
Yeah, what?
People either love her or they hate her voice and they can't stand her.
Yes.
I fall in the former. I love Stevie Nicks' voice. So... This was released on her 1981 album. It was her solo debut album called Belladonna. You know, Stevie Nicks, Don Henley. We saw Don Henley. Well, we didn't see Don Henley in concert. We saw Don Henley with the Eagles in concert in, 2014?
Yeah.
So he was 60-something years old? Like 67, 68? Still, voice still phenomenal.
It wasn't long before...
Glenn Frey died.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was very sad
he
for
was,
me.
You could tell he was struggling.
Yeah, he had been sick. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He had been sick, and you could tell the sickness was, you know, at the very least he had a cold, right?
Yeah.
It was probably, we know now it was probably more than that, but it had definitely affected his voice. He couldn't hit the notes like he used to. But Don Henley had no problem. He had been sick too, but he had no problem hitting his notes. He was phenomenal. But so this song hit number 6 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100. It was number 10 on the Adult Contemporary chart. You'd think that would be switched, right? This sounds more like an Adult Contemporary song than a pop song. But number 12 in Canada, and it was a minor hit in Australia and New Zealand. It finished 1982 as the 36th best song in the United States.
I feel like that's a little low.
You know, I would like to go through the 1982, you know, top 100 and go, okay, maybe that's an episode. We go through the top 100 and be like, yeah, that's way too high. That's way too low. But so this is going to blow your mind. Stevie Nicks wrote the song for Waylon Jennings and Jesse Coulter's duet album. Stevie Nicks wrote this song for Waylon
Jennings. That's fantastic. Did they record it?
They did not. The album was actually called Leather and Lace.
Wow.
But they did not include the song on the album.
Well, you know, I love me some Waylon and Jesse.
I know you do. So the song compares the male singer's rougher life, represented by Leather, to the female singer's softer life, represented by Lace, and how opposites attract. Now, here's what I find funny. It's the male singer's rougher life with the Leather, yet Don Henley has the smoother voice.
I know.
And Stevie Nicks has the rougher voice.
It feels like it should be the other way around.
Did you say something about juxtaposition?
Yes, I did.
Is it a dichotomy?
It is a dichotomy. Because I feel like...
Is it ironic?
Stevie Nicks wore the Leather and Don Henley wore the Lace.
You might get us in trouble with that one. So this is the first time I heard a duet where the female had a lower register than the male.
Yes.
But it also, you know, this is kind of great because it's, you know, it's 1981, but it's released by two band members that were king of 1970s, like soft rock.
Right.
Right? The Eagles and Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
So just really interesting that those two, like, almost like super bands, even though they weren't super bands, they come together and make a great duet.
It's interesting to me because we talk about, like, well, Peter Cetera picked some interesting duet partners. And I think Don Henley did, too, because he also went on and he did a really good duet with Trisha Yearwood, which was a popular country song. But back when Trisha was like brand new, nobody really knew much about Trisha. And he did a duet with her that probably helped her career take off. And so I think it's interesting to look at these male artists and the female duet partners they picked.
Well, why do you think it was the male partners who picked the female partners and not the other way around?
You know what? That's a good point.
I mean, we know that Peter Cetera picked Amy Grant, but this one, Stevie Nicks wrote the song.
That's true.
She picked Don Henley.
Especially if she's wearing the leather.
She's not wearing the leather. She's wearing the lace.
Oh.
Oh, boy. But yeah, two huge 70s bands, Kings of Soft Rock, two of my favorites, actually.
I like this song.
Yeah, I do, too. I do, too. So, good song.
But, made Little Lynn's a little uncomfortable, but I like it now.
Yeah, no, I get it.
So, I'm doing this next one under
protest.
Yes.
So, this next one is the only song that it's a love song, but it's not a ballad. So I don't know how you can hate that song.
I mean, maybe hate's a strong word. I don't like it.
That song is awesome. So it's got a fantastic beat. It's got Aretha's powerful vocals.
She does have some powerful chords, doesn't she?
Mixed in with George Michael's kind of like smooth poppy song. And it just goes well together.
Yes.
And it's very upbeat and just very fun.
Yes.
But I'm taking away your song. Go for it.
So this is number 5. I Knew You Were Waiting, Aretha Franklin and George Michael. It was released in 1987 from the album Aretha. I want to be so famous my album can just be Lindsay.
We can make that happen.
Awesome. Okay. Let me tell you how it did on the charts. It was number 1 in the US, UK, Zimbabwe.
That's our first mention of Zimbabwe on this.
Netherlands, podcast. Ireland, Belgium, and Australia. It was a top 5 in 8 other countries. It reached number 36 on the 1987 U.S. Billboard charts, which seems kind of low, I guess, considering its international success.
Yeah, I think that was for the year end, right? The number 36?
Right. Finished higher than number 36 on the year end charts in the following countries: Australia, Belgium, Canada, New Zealand, UK, with the highest being number 8 in the Netherlands.
So it was bigger everywhere else.
I mean, yeah, it was big here. It was number 1.
It was a number 1.
We didn't like it.
We liked it. It was a number 1.
We didn't like it that much.
It just finished 36 for the year in.
It won a 1987 Grammy for Best R&B Performance by a Duo or Group with Vocals.
As it should have.
Billboard lists this as Aretha's all-time biggest Hot 100 single.
Well, there you go. This is bigger than R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
I disagree.
You can find out what this song means to me.
I could not disagree more.
I'm just telling you, that's what Billboard says.
That Billboard is wrong. Isn't she the one that does Pink Cadillac? Or is that Natalie Cole?
That's Natalie Cole. She does Freeway of Love.
There you go. I mean, Freeway of Love is better than this.
It's R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
So. It's better than all of those.
Not according to Billboard.
Okay. Clive Davis suggested that Aretha and George Michael get together for this song. And Aretha was all in, as she was a huge Wham fan.
She wasn't the only one.
So do you think that this song helped George Michael separate himself from Wham?
Possibly. Possibly, because this came out in 1987 and so did his solo album.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think he was looking to go big.
Right.
And he was looking to...
I mean, you couldn't pick a bigger, better artist to go big with than Aretha Franklin.
The Queen of Soul.
So.
The Queen of Soul. So, yeah, I can't believe you don't like that song.
Do not like it.
Man, it's so much fun. And it's different from any other song on our list because
it's not a
slow love ballad. Yes. It is a upbeat.
And for that, I appreciate the diversity.
Right. When the river ran deep, I didn't falter.
My river runs deep.
I knew you were waiting for me. You're waiting for me to go into the number four song.
Yes, I am.
All right. So here is our number four song, another ballad. So, I find it funny that there's a love song about a casino.
What?
Almost Pair of Dice?
Oh, Jim, stop with the corniness.
So, here's what I find interesting. This ends up as number four on our list. You and I both rated this as number five.
Really?
Yeah, we were on the same page on this song. We both had this as our fifth favorite song. Why didn't it end up as five? Because some of the high stuff that I had listed, you had listed as low, and some of the high stuff you had listed, I had listed as low. So it bumped this song up to number five.
It messed with it a little bit.
So this song is Almost Paradise by Mike Reno and Ann Wilson. Now, Mike Reno, do you recognize him?
No, I have no idea.
Loverboy. Everybody's Working for the Weekend.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So this is from the soundtrack of the 1984 movie Footloose.
One of my all-time favorites.
It charted, it peaked at number 7 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100. It hit number 1 on the U.S. Adult Contemporary chart. It was number 3 in Canada, and the only other place I could find that it charted was Our Friends Down Under.
Really?
And it only reached 52.
I love this song.
It finished 1984 as the 59th biggest hit in the U.S.
It just doesn't feel quite fair to me.
So as I mentioned, it's Mike Reno of Loverboy. Ann Wilson of Heart, right? Two big 80s bands.
Yep.
The song was actually written by Eric Carmen.
Help me with... I know who that is, but help me with who that is.
How about Hungry Eyes?
Yes. Okay.
Make Me Lose Control.
Yeah.
All by Myself.
See? That, I mean, and that fits, because I this is a good song.
So this is one of three top 10 hits from Footloose. Do you know the other two top 10 hits from Footloose?
Let's Hear It for the Boy.
Yes. The second one's going to stump you.
All I Want to Do is Dance.
All I Want to Do is Dance.
I don't know. I'm just...
It's a little song called Footloose.
I'm an idiot.
So I will say the only personal story I have for this is my friend Bob and my friend Sarah actually sang this as a duet at karaoke one night.
No way.
Yes. And of course, you know, Sarah was singing it all seriously. And at the end, instead of saying paradise, Bob was actually singing Pair of Dice.
Oh, my goodness.
Where I got the corny joke from.
I should have known the corniness came from Bob.
So, do you remember when it was played in the movie?
Of course I do. I love Footloose. And I loved it as a kid. That's one of the movies, you know, that we would go rent at Kroger when we rented our VCR.
Mm-hmm.
And I would dance around the house because I wanted to dance with Kevin Bacon. So.
Who was Kevin Bacon dancing with during Almost Paradise?
I don't remember. The big old fella in the overalls that he was trying to teach to dance, maybe.
You think?
You've never seen Footloose.
I haven't, no. I don't watch movies about dancing.
So it's such a good 80s movie.
No. I mean, I'm not a dancer. I don't watch movies about dancing. I have no interest in watching movies about dancing.
It's a good one. It's a good one. Okay.
Number three.
Number three. Every journey always brings me back to you.
Two angels who've been rescued from the fall.
This is one of my all-time favorite songs.
So, this is number three on our list. You had this rated way too high at number one. I think your love for Peter Cetera just took over.
And Cher. I love Peter Cetera and Cher.
I did not know that you loved Cher. I knew your mom loved Cher.
So my mom and my Aunt Renee loved Cher. Therefore I inherited the love
of Cher.
Yes.
So, you had it rated as number one, and I had it rated as like six or seven. So it wasn't like I had it low, but I didn't have it number one either.
So I used to sit in my room and sing the song at the top of my lungs.
Really?
Because I just, you know, I was at that age where this was probably more mid-90s, if I had to guess, when I would have been listening to it. But I was, you know, hopelessly, like, looking for my, you know, the love of my life.
You're forever.
You know? Yes, yes, yes. You know how you are when you're, like, 14, 15, yes. 16 years old. So, okay. I'm not sure if I officially said the name of the song After All with Peter Cetera and Cher. The first North American single released from Cher's 19th album, Heart of Stone, from 1989. It reached number 6 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 chart, number 1 on the Adult Contemporary chart, number 5 in Canada, 24 in Ireland, and 50 in Australia, and didn't chart anywhere else. Mm. It landed at number 79 on the 1989 year-end Billboard chart, and it was number 5 on the AC year-end chart. So it was the love theme from the film Chances Are, where it was nominated for Best Original Song at the Academy Awards in 1989. Do you know who it lost out to, or what song it lost out to?
I bet it was a Disney movie.
It lost to Under the Sea from The Little Mermaid.
See, Disney just cranks out those Oscar-winning hits. Yes. I don't know how they do it, but they do.
Yes. Did you ever see the movie Chances Are?
I did not. Have you?
Mm-hmm.
Who's in it? Who stars in it?
Cybill Shepherd, Robert Downey Jr., Ryan O'Neal.
Yeah, that is not a movie that I would have watched in 1989 or 1999 or 2009.
Oh, well. Besides being released on Cher's album in 1989, it also appears on Peter Cetera's 1997 compilation album, titled You're the Inspiration, a collection. I had that album.
I was going to say, I am surprised that album isn't plastered somewhere on one of our walls, like as if it was a gold record that you had written.
Well, you know, now that I'm setting up a podcast room, it may. It Cher's first solo number one hit on the Adult Contemporary chart. I'm not sure how it's considered a solo hit, though, when it's a duet.
Yeah, when you said that, I'm like, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, and I don't understand this either. At the Academy Awards that year, the song was performed by James Ingram and Melissa Manchester.
James Ingram.
So what happened? They have never done this song live together. Cher and Peter Cetera have never performed this song live together.
Because Cher is afraid how bad she would be shown up by Peter
Cetera. Oh, my word. That would be impossible. You know, Cher is like 80 and she looks like 40. It's, I don't know. She's obviously made
like
a deal with the devil.
Like alien 40 or like real 40?
I think she's beautiful, but I don't know.
Because, you know, some of those older women, they look like they're like an alien.
No, I feel like she's
they get done.
Beautiful, but who knows? You might disagree. But I love the song. Nothing, you will never change my mind on that.
No, I'm not saying it's a bad song. But it's, you know, again, it's another song where the female had a lower register than the male.
Yes, yes.
Must be an 80s thing.
Yes, for sure. And we don't have very many alto singing females these days.
No, we don't. We don't. All right. Well, if that's all you've got on your number three,
that's all I got.
I'm ready to move on to number two, which is one of the biggest hits of the 80s.
Now I had the time of my life. No, I never felt like this before. Yes, I swear it's a truth, and I owe it all to you.
So this one's a little bit more upbeat, too. It's not so much a ballad. I mean, it's almost kind of a mixture of a ballad and an upbeat song. So this is Time of My Life by Bill Medley and Jennifer Warnes. I don't think I've got to announce that to anybody listening to this podcast.
Well, I mean, if right. you do, then...
Ugh. Yeah. Unless maybe they were in a coma during the 80s and they're trying to catch back up by listening to us. It's from the 1987 album Dirty Dancing, original soundtrack. It's another soundtrack song. Another movie song. So, you know how big this song was?
How big?
It was number one on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100. It was also number one on the Contemporary chart for 4 weeks. Not only that, it hit number one in a plethora of countries.
Plethora.
It hit number one in Australia, Belgium, Canada, Netherlands, and South Africa. It was also a top five hit in six other countries, including our favorite, West Germany. It finished number 27 on the 1987 year-end charts and number 32 in Canada. Seems kind of low.
That feels very low to me.
So this song brought home the bling. It won a Golden Globe for Best Original Song. It also won the Oscar for Best Original Song. And it won a Grammy for Best Pop Performance by a Duo or Group with Vocals.
All of those things very deserving.
So, previously mentioned Bill Medley of the Righteous Brothers, and then Jennifer Warnes' duet. The song was composed by Frankie Privetti and others. He was initially asked by the head of Millennium Records about writing some music to a little film called Dirty Dancing. And at first he refused, thinking that the film was pornographic based on its title. But the producer was insistent and just kept declaring to Frankie, it's going to change your life, right? Do this. It's going to change your life. So he gave in and he did it. So not only did he write this, he also wrote Hungry Eyes, which we mentioned earlier, that was sung by Eric Carmen.
Yeah.
Right? I always thought Eric Carmen wrote that because Eric Carmen's a great songwriter, right? So I just assumed he wrote Hungry Eyes because he sang it. Nope. But here's what's interesting. You want to hear some of the other artists that were initially approached to sing the song before Bill Medley and Jennifer Warnes? It was initially intended for Donna Summer and Joe Esposito. You're like, I see you looking at me like, who is Joe Esposito? Karate Kid, you're the best.
Around. Wow.
So it was intended for them. But Donna Summer turned it down because she didn't like the title of the movie.
Well, yeah.
Next, it was proposed. I don't know why that word is so tough for me. Proposed to Daryl Hall and Kim Carnes.
Now, that would have been a good duo.
But they also turned it down.
Because of the
They didn't say title? Anything about the title, just said they turned it down. So eventually it went to Bill Medley, and he kind of turned it down, too, because his wife was having a baby, and he promised his wife he would be there for the birth. You know, remember back in the 80s, dads weren't always there for the birth, right? But he promised his wife he would be there for the birth, and so he's like, yeah, no, I can't do it. And then they brought it to Jennifer Warnes because she had been, she had had success as a soundtrack person, right?
Yep.
And so she was a little reluctant, but they threw a big bag of cash at her. So she said, okay.
And then that would have gotten me.
Yeah. And then she agreed to do it, but only if Bill Medley would do it.
He's an interesting choice to me.
Right. Well, you know, Righteous Brothers. Yeah. I think he might have been a hero of hers, you know. So after his baby was born, he decided to do it. So they did it together.
And the rest, as they say, is history.
Yes. The rest they say. I like that. The rest, as they say, is history. So I remember this song came out like during my eighth grade year, right? It came out the summer right before eighth grade. And it was huge during my eighth grade year. I don't think I even knew that it was from Dirty Dancing. And it, as you know, as I just mentioned, you know, on Almost Paradise, I don't watch movies about dancing. So I've never seen the movie to this day.
It's so funny. You know, when I saw the movie, it came out as I've mentioned repeatedly, we didn't have cable growing up, but we had friends who did. And so we'd go over there, you know, and they would have the free HBO weekend or whatever, whatever, Showtime or I don't know, whatever. So I watched Dirty Dancing because of that. And as a 10, 11-year-old girl, of course, I'm siding with baby, like, don't, you know, put baby in a corner. And then it's so funny, you grow up and you become an adult and you realize baby needed a good spanking and sent to her room. What was the dad's name, the Law and Order?
Jerry Orbach?
Yes, Jerry Orbach was not as hard on baby as I would have been.
Well, you know, he did. I mean, maybe if you could let him know now, he might say to you, when I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong.
So it's so funny how things change, you know, at some point as you grow up.
Yes, yes. So baby but needed like, to be baby, put in the corner.
Baby's in love with Patrick Swayze. Yeah, right.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
I think my favorite thing about Dirty Dancing was when they tried to do it in the Goldbergs.
That's hysterical because Beverly was baby.
Yes. All right. So that's all I have on my number two. It's time for our number one song.
Up Where We Belong, Joe Cocker and Jennifer Warnes. I love that song.
So, I am shocked that you did not have this as your number one. I had this as my number one. You had it as your number two. I mean, it makes number one because this song kicks the tar out of After All by Peter Cetera and Cher as if this is the Hulkster and
Peter
Cetera is the Brooklyn Brawler.
Oh my gosh. Okay, let me give you some deets. This is from the 1982 album, An Officer and a Gentleman. It was number one on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100. It spent 3 weeks at the top of the charts there. Also number one in Australia, Canada, and South Africa. It was a top three hit in Ireland, New Zealand, Norway, Spain, and Sweden. It finished on the 1983 year-end Billboard at number 27. That seems a little low to me.
Yes, it seems very low to me.
But here's why. It was released in July of 82, so it had about 5 months on the chart in 1982 that did not count towards 1983. Mm. Had it been released later, it probably would have been a top 10 year-end song.
I would agree with that, yeah.
So, just like Time of My Life, this song won the Golden Globe and Oscar for Best Original Song. Joe Cocker and Jennifer Warnes also won a Grammy for Best Pop Performance by a Duo or Group. So, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that they picked Jennifer Warnes to sing on this because of her previous success. It's my understanding she's then suggested Joe Cocker to be her duet partner. I think that that's an interesting choice. I love his voice.
Me too.
But it is a very unique voice. But I guess if Jennifer Warnes wants you to sing a duet with her on a soundtrack, you're going to do it, right?
I think you should do it because it's going to be successful.
What? Some stations refuse to play it. Do you think it was just the weird combo?
Probably.
Until the movie was released, and then the song hit it big. Usually the movie studios will release the song to promote the movie, right? But they were struggling with that because nobody wanted to play it. In this case, it was the opposite. The popularity of the movie made the song a hit.
Right, because I remember Time of My Life came out before Dirty Dancing did.
Yes.
Right, not a whole lot before.
Yes.
But it was just kind of like, okay, well, what? This is a cool song, and then yep. You learned it's Dirty Dancing, so you might want to go see it.
But I love Joe Cocker's just, how do you even describe his voice? His edginess or something.
Gravelly and edgy. And
he's just not a traditional.
He's the male Kim Carnes.
He's not a traditional singer. And I love that compared to her just like
smooth
professionalism.
Yes, yes. So I find that interesting that she picked him. I think, again, it was probably one of those things where he, you know, she liked Bill Medley, right? And so Joe Cocker, you know, is that age. So it's probably somebody that she grew up listening to or liking.
You know.
And she was like, okay, I want to sing with these guys, right? I think, so I did a little research on this movie too. And I think they originally wrote it as just a, for a solo artist, right?
Oh, wow,
and they
really?
They picked Jennifer Warnes, and she said, I think it should be a duet, and I'd like to sing a duet with Joe Cocker.
Okay.
And so I also read that Joe Cocker was, he was in, but then when he flew to Los Angeles to record it, like, he got nervous and, like, wouldn't come out of his hotel room.
Wow.
And, like, it took, you know, a lot of urging and everything for him to get out there and
That's
do
interesting.
It. Yeah, it really is. But then he also said, you know, once, like, they recorded, he was like, this is a number one hit. And people were like, oh, well, we don't know. It could be. He's like, no. Like, this is a number one hit.
I love
hit.
That.
And he knew it. So, yeah, that was really cool. So it's funny that the movie makes the song popular. So this song makes me think of my early childhood.
Does
it? It's one of the first songs that I remember, you know, just hearing. And it's like one of those things that's so long ago that you barely remember it. Like, you remember the song, but you don't necessarily remember what was going on in your life at the time.
Yeah.
And it's really fuzzy, and it's really hard to come up with those memories. There's a bunch of early 80s songs like that for me. One of them, like, Video Killed the Radio Star.
Yep.
That song, like, I don't remember hearing it as a kid, but it brings back up these fuzzy memories, so I know I had to have heard it as a kid. But yeah, I love the contrast between Joe Cocker's rough voice and her, like, smooth.
It's just not anything voice. I would have ever put together. But
no,
it
me neither.
So works but in this situation.
She nailed it. And this song was huge. And this is definitely my favorite on the list. And I think you're starting to reconsider and say, yeah, this is actually better than After All.
Maybe not. It's a great song.
It is.
Well, so, this was fun.
This was. What did you notice about this list?
We had a lot of repeat performers.
We did.
Jennifer Warnes, Linda Ronstadt, Peter Cetera.
Yes.
That was interesting.
James Ingram was on there twice.
Oh, that's right.
Also, a lot of songs from movies. Right?
A lot of songs from movies. A lot of just, we threw in some randoms, like Bill Medley and Joe Cocker. Not that Joe Cocker's random, but, you know, in this situation a little.
Right.
You
would have thought their careers might be over by 1980s.
Yeah.
But yeah, I loved it.
So, but this was, I enjoyed this. Hopefully it wasn't too lovey-dovey for people.
Well, this is being released on Valentine's Day, so I think it needs to be lovey-dovey for people. Listen to this as you're out on your Valentine's Day date, or on your way there and on the way back.
There you go. But, we want you guys to be our Valentines.
Yes. So if you like the show, make sure to give it a 5-star rating and review.
I said it again. Did you hear me? Valentines.
Oh my gosh. I expect you to be a professional, and I don't always listen to how you end words.
Oh, so we would love a 5-star review. It would mean the world to us. Please, if you enjoy this podcast, tell a friend, like and subscribe on whatever, you know, podcast platform you listen to us on.
We're on them all.
We are on them all. And until next time,
I'm Jim.
And I'm Lindsay.
And we are
Children of the 80s.